Then Rahim shows up on V's doorstep today and says she owes him because he did something for her. V says she hasn't had contact with him for years. The shooting is really the only connecting link. I'm pretty sure I can say that Rahim wasn't looking to get me. That leaves Tyrone or Charisse or both. Am I on track here? The detective nodded, looking amused.
Yeah, you're doing great.
Thank you. V here says her husband is a saint, although spouses have been known to hide things from each other. Well, let's say as far as any criminal activities, Tyrone is in the clear. You checked out Charisse, you told me, and she's exactly what she appeared to be. A nice middle-class girl from the burbs with a city job. Unless she had a serious drug habit that she hid very well, she would have no reason to cross paths with Rahim.
Emmy says no drugs, Hrivenek said.
So why would Rahim order a hit on the car? I think by now everyone realized where this discussion was going. V, I don't exactly know you well, and you may find this question offensive, but was your husband having an affair with Charisse? It was almost physically painful to watch V's brittle, carefully polished facade crumble.
I don't know, she whispered.
Then, in a stronger voice, she added,
But I have to say I've wondered. They spent a lot of time together.
I thought for a moment that the detective was going to jump on that and run with it, but in the end she didn't. We probably all knew what that kind of suspicion was like, at least in theory. I glanced at James, and he looked steadily back at me. I had a very hard time believing that he could ever cheat on me, but we hadn't been together long. No way could I guess what kind of relationship V and Tyrone had. Detective Hrivenek actually looked kind of pleased.
Okay, then. Let's go with Nell's theory and say those two were doing the deed. Let's guess that Rahim found out, saw them somewhere they shouldn't have been. They're looking too cozy together. What would he do?
You're asking me? V protested. You think I have a clue how a drug-dealing lowlife would think? I have done everything in my power to separate myself from that whole poisonous environment.
And things have only gotten worse there since I left that behind.
The detective cocked her head at V, with an expression of something like pity.
Maybe I've got a better idea. Say he's a big man in his territory. It's his home turf. He knows people there. He's got family. You may think you cut your ties, but people know about you, where you come from, where you've gotten to. Maybe they're happy for you, or maybe they think you've gotten too big for your designer britches. But to Rahim, you're still family. He sees your man messing around with someone who isn't you. That's an insult to family and to him. So maybe he decides to do something about it, kind of like defending the family honor, you know?
V was staring at her with a look of horror. You're suggesting that because my husband might have been involved with a colleague, Rahim might have decided to kill him or her? Did he mean to? Or was he trying to send a warning?
Can't say for sure. The guy he hired wasn't exactly the brightest bulb. Maybe he misunderstood his instructions. Maybe he's a lousy shot. Maybe he saw Ms. Pratt in the car and got rattled. Maybe it's time I sent a car over to your house and your husband's office to see if Rahim shows up looking for him, to finish the job.
With that, she stood up abruptly and pulled out her phone, walking out into the hallway to make her calls. Leaving us sitting around the table like dummies. With a start, V started rummaging in her bag.
I've got to call Tyrone, she said.
She didn't bother to move away, but hit a speed dial button. No answer, apparently. She hit another, and again there was no answer. A third button. No answer. V slumped in her chair, her hands shaking.
Oh, God. He's not picking up. Not his cell. Not at home. And nobody's answering at the office. Where is he?
I didn't think saying that he could be lying dead at home or in an alley somewhere would help the situation. Chapter 26 Hrivenek returned quickly.
Cars are on their way to your place and his office. You reach him, Mrs. Blakeney?
No. Do you think he's in trouble?
Could be. Or maybe he stopped for a quart of milk. Or a drink in a bar.
He doesn't drink, V said absently. You sure about this affair?
Of course I'm not. But you seem to think it's possible. He's the only one who's sure, and he may not want to admit it. How's his mood been lately?
No different, that I noticed. I mean, he didn't complain about how his work was going. Not that there have been any major successes or anything lately. He was excited about talking with Nell here. He thought that adding the history piece could make the project more appealing.
V turned to me.
I know you didn't spend much time together, Nell, but did you notice anything between them?
I recalled that one poignant touch to Charisse's cheek when it was clear she was dead. I decided not to share it. I could have misunderstood it.
No, but as you say, we weren't together for long and we talked business, nothing personal.
Their conduct with me had been unquestionably professional, so that wasn't a lie.
Now that you've seen Rahim, Nell, the detective interrupted, you think he was in the car?
I shook my head. I told you before, I was in the back seat and didn't have a clear view. I wasn't paying any attention to a passing car, at least not until Charisse pointed out that she'd seen it go by before.
Obviously, she had more street smarts than I did. Both driver's side windows were open, but all I really saw was the gun in the hand of the guy in the back, and I ducked fast. I could tell the guys were black, and they didn't have pink hair or colorful clothes on, but that was about it. I wish I could help more. Did you find the car?
Still looking. Shooter didn't have it when we picked him up, said he ditched it somewhere. Nothing registered in his name, although that doesn't mean squat around there.
May we go? V asked.
Detective Hrivenak studied her for a moment.
Go where?
Home, I suppose. To wait for Tyrone, or to hear from you. Will there be police waiting outside if Rahim does decide to come by?
The detective looked uncertain.
I've got good reason to ask them to check to see if Tyrone is there, but if he isn't, or if Tyrone is but he chooses not to open the door, there's not much more I can do. I can't commit a police vehicle to keep watch based on a vague suspicion, since the department thinks this case is pretty much closed, at least until this Rahim guy popped up today. Sorry, but you're on your own. Keep your cell phone handy and call if you see anything suspicious.
And Tyrone?
Lady's a big boy. Either he comes home on his own or he calls you, or we find him.
She realized what she had been about to say and bit off her words.
Again, we can't go searching for him. We don't have the resources. He's not even missing officially. If you hear from him, call us.
Call you or 911? I asked suddenly.
Hrivenak sighed.
911 would be faster. Damn, I'd really like to sit down and actually eat dinner once in a while. But don't do anything stupid, you all. This guy Rahim is nothing but trouble.
She stood up.
I'm out of here.
We trailed after her to the front door, and I let her out, then stood there, uncertain. V spoke first.
I should go home. Wait for Tyrone.
James and I exchanged glances, and I gave him a small nod. Telepathy? Not exactly, but I was pretty sure I knew what he was thinking.
We'll go with you, V.
James said,
You shouldn't be home alone. I'll give you a ride, and if Tyrone is there, we'll be on our way.
You don't have to do that, V protested.
V, a short drive out of our way is vastly preferable to hearing that Rahim found you, I said, or Tyrone. Let's go.
V did not argue any further.
I locked up after arming the alarm, and we crossed the street to the parking lot without seeing any large, angry black men. James retrieved the car, and we set off for V's home, with me providing directions. It might have been faster to walk, but we arrived there in under half an hour, and actually found a parking space on the same block. After James had turned off the engine, we sat in silence for a long moment, scanning the scene. Everything looked normal. There were a few people coming and going, but they looked like they belonged there, and V didn't seem alarmed.
"Thank you for the ride. I'll be fine from here," she said, gathering up her coat and bag.
"We'll come in and make sure everything is all right,"
James said in a level voice that didn't allow for any argument. I wasn't about to protest. I expected V to argue, but she gave in quickly.
Fine.
We straggled out of the car and walked to her front door. She had her keys at the ready and opened it quickly. James lingered behind for a moment, in serious agent mode, checking the street again. I didn't interfere.
Tyrone?
V called out. No answer. Since it was now full dark and there were no lights on, it seemed unlikely that anyone was home. The house had that peculiar stillness that signaled emptiness. Unless, of course, Rahim had gotten here before us. No, Nell, don't go there. V strode ahead of us toward the back, turning on lights as she went, her slender heels clicking on the polished wood floors. James followed more slowly, watching, listening. It would have been a treat to observe him operating in professional mode, but right now I was as nervous as a cat, expecting to see an armed thug or two or three jump out from behind the furniture.
Or maybe I wouldn't see it if it was a bullet that came first. V came back from what must have been the kitchen and shook her head, answering the unasked question. Can I get you something? Coffee? Wine?
No, thanks.
James answered for us.
You want me to check upstairs?
We'll go together, V said and led the way. I was left alone downstairs. Part of me wanted to tag along with V and James, but that would be childish. I pulled my cell phone out of my purse, made sure it was on, and slipped it into my pocket, just in case. Then I walked into the living room, which ran the depth of the house, with a dining area at the rear, opening onto the kitchen. Having met V, I studied the furnishings and artworks on the walls. All very nice, not too showy, but good quality. Somehow V had achieved a room that proved how far she had come and how well she was doing now. It was a pleasant home. There were framed photographs lined up along a mantelpiece, and I moved closer to study them. No childhood photos. A couple of inexpensive studio pictures of older people, parents no doubt. A wedding picture for V and Tyrone, with V looking uncomfortable and Tyrone beaming. 10 years ago, had V said. James and V were still upstairs when I heard a noise at the front door. At least I didn't shriek out. But I backed carefully down the hall so I could conceal myself in the kitchen, out of sight. Was it cowardly of me to leave V and James exposed to whatever lay on the other side? No way to warn them quickly without alerting whoever was outside, and James was the one with the gun, not me. I heard a key in the lock. The door swung inward, and a voice called out,
V, you home?
I slumped against the kitchen wall. Tyrone. I quickly returned to the hall, at the same time that V and James came down the stairs. Poor Tyrone looked baffled by the crowd, his wife, me, and a stranger in a suit.
What's going on?
He said. V advanced on him and gave him a solid kiss and a hug.
That's for not being dead. Now you've got to convince me that I shouldn't kill you.
V, what the hell is happening here? Now, nice to see you again, but damned if I know what you're doing in my living room right now. And who's this guy?
He looked at James, still a step or two higher on the stairs. James came down quickly.
Special Agent James Morrison, with the FBI. I'm with Nell.
As if that explained anything.
Why are you here?
Tyrone demanded. Why the hell haven't you been answering your phone, Ty? V demanded.
Battery ran down. What's it matter?
James spoke first.
The police have been trying to reach you. Raheem Hill accosted your wife on Market Street after she left her office today, and Nell was with her.
Tyrone looked at V.
Raheem? Do you know him?
James asked.
Mostly by reputation, not the kind of guy you mess with. What the hell did he want?
He didn't bother to explain, V said. You haven't talked to him, have you?
Why would I be talking to that lowlife?
Because when he approached me this afternoon, he said he'd done me a favor. And then a police detective told me that he was wanted in association with that shooting last week, when Charisse Chapman was killed.
I wished I had a better view of Tyrone's face, because from where I stood, it looked like he had an inkling of an idea about what was going on. He looked around at each of us, ending with his wife.
We really need to talk about this in front of these people?
He asked her.
These people were nice enough to drive me back and make sure the house was safe. Raheem is still out there. And the police are looking for him. He seems to believe we have unfinished business.
He wouldn't come here,
Tyrone protested, if weakly.
He came to my building, didn't he? V retorted. He thinks nobody can touch him. And since Nell ended up in the line of fire, I think she deserves a chance to hear what you have to say.
Tyrone wilted, just a bit.
And him?
He said, nodding at James, who had resumed his stone-faced mode.
You ready to take on Raheem and his boys if they show up at the door? Because he is,
V told him, before James could speak. I almost felt sorry for Tyrone. Sure, maybe he'd gotten involved with a young, pretty, smart woman who shared his passion for the city and his enthusiasm for his community project. Maybe he and V had grown apart, and now she was moving in a different world. But he couldn't have predicted that it would end up with an angry drug dealer trying to kill him, or having to explain his wayward love life to not only his wife, but to me and an FBI agent in his own living room. Oh, what a tangled web and all that.
Maybe we could all sit down, I suggested.
V stalked past us into the living room,
and Tyrone followed meekly. They took what appeared to be their usual chairs, leaving James and me the settee. We all sat.
"Let's make this short,"
V said.
"Were you having an affair with Charisse?"
Tyrone looked at her for a long moment, as if trying on different answers. In the end, he said simply,
"Yes."
"How long?"
"Maybe a year. We've been working together a lot, and..."
V held up a hand.
"I don't want to hear explanations and excuses. And I'm pretty sure these people don't either. That's between the two of us. Do you think Rahim or any of his boys could have seen the two of you together?"
Tyrone thought for a moment.
"Maybe."
"In the neighborhood?"
"Yes."
"You ever talked with Rahim?"
"I told you, no. The guy scares me. I know people who know him, so he's got to know who I am, but we've never met face to face."
"Did Charisse use drugs? Have you, ever?"
"No, and no. How can you think that? You've lived with me for 10 years. I don't do that. We've both seen what kind of damage drugs can do to people and to a community. V, what's this all about?"
She weighed her answer, then spoke carefully.
"We're thinking that maybe Rahim saw you two going on behind my back, and he thought it was an insult to him and figured he should make it right. He hired some small-timer to shoot at you, maybe just to scare you, or maybe more. Now he thinks he's done me a favor by getting rid of Charisse, and he might be wanting to finish the job and take you down."
Tyrone shut his eyes.
"I never thought..."
"I bet you didn't."
He spat at him. James interrupted.
"I'd pull the blinds and keep away from any windows if I were you."
"Oh, right. Somebody might decide to shoot at us again."
"Yeah, sure,"
Tyrone said, and stood up and crossed to the front window, which shattered just as he reached it. A bullet whizzed by, embedding itself in the back wall. At least it had missed Tyrone, who'd plastered himself against the wall beside the window, then slid down until he was sitting on the floor.
"Looks like Rahim has found you,"
James said. Chapter 27. Then James shifted quickly into agent mode.
"Down, now."
We didn't argue. His next order was,
"Nell, call the police."
I pulled out my phone, hit 911, and explained quickly. I debated about calling Hrivenek next, but the 911 operator said to stay on the line, so I did. No doubt Hrivenek would hear soon enough. Oh, goody, now I'd get to watch James in action. But at this moment, I really did not want to watch James in action. I wanted to be home in my nice kitchen with a glass of wine in my hand, eating dinner. People didn't shoot at me there. Why was it I liked Philadelphia? What was supposed to happen next? I reviewed the situation while plastering myself as flat as possible against the floor. Someone, Rahim, was after Tyrone, or maybe now that same someone had added V to the list, since she'd dissed Rahim on the street. Neither one of them was giving him the respect he thought he deserved. The next most important question was, did they know James and I were here? I was no threat to anybody, but James was an FBI agent and was armed and dangerous. With the element of surprise, he was our secret weapon, unless they knew he was in the building and brought in reinforcements with more guns. James darted a quick look at us.
"Stay down,"
he hissed. "Are we waiting for the cops?" I hissed back.
"I'd rather not engage in gunfire with one or more unknown assailants. Other people could get hurt."
"Rahim must really be taking this seriously to come into this part of town and start shooting. You think he's alone, or did he bring friends?"
"I'm guessing he figured he could handle things."
We waited silently. Nothing happened for about 2 years. Well, more like 2 minutes, but it seemed a lot longer than that. Tyrone didn't look like he was about to leap to his feet and protect his castle. V did not appear to be prepared to take charge and start issuing orders. Terror kind of leveled the playing field. I was content to lie there with my head down, although now and then I peered up to look at James to see if he sensed anything. I was not prepared when he did. Maybe he had bat hearing, because I hadn't heard anything. Suddenly he focused his attention on the back of the house, and moments later the kitchen door crashed open and slammed against the wall, and then a very large man with a very large gun came charging through it and thundered down the hall toward where we all lay cowering on the floor. Yep, Rahim, no surprise. How had such a large man managed to sneak around to the back without being noticed? James had retreated into the corner of the living room nearest the kitchen, out of Rahim's sight line, as he barreled toward us, then stopped.
I didn't dare look at James for fear of giving away his presence and position. Both Tyrone and V had their eyes fixed on Rahim. Rahim looked pissed off when he noticed me.
"What the hell are you doing here?"
he said, waving the gun at me. I gave V a ride home. I didn't volunteer that it had been after a meeting with a city homicide detective. Where the hell were the cops? How long since I'd called them?
Too bad for you.
Rahim took a step nearer, looking down at Tyrone and V.
You gonna talk to me now? You know what this scumbag done?
He asked V, pointing his weapon at Tyrone.
I do now, she told him.
What's it to you?
She got up onto her knees and looked at him squarely.
I don't let no one mess with my family. You're still family, like it or not.
Your mama still go to church?
V demanded, climbing to her feet.
Every Sunday? Bet you don't, or this piece of crap you married.
You hear about forgiveness in church? Tyrone is a good man. He's trying to help the neighborhood,
V told him. Did she believe that, I wondered.
Yeah, I seen how he helps. He in bed with the city woman. Bet that helps a lot.
I was beginning to think that V was stalling, trying to buy time for the police to arrive. She was certainly putting on a good show. I realized with a start that my phone was still on and lying under me. Another good reason not to move. I didn't want Rahim to see it. This way the 911 people should be able to hear every word, I hoped. Rahim took another step closer and kicked Tyrone, who gasped in pain.
You! What you got to say for yourself? Can't keep it in your pants? When you married this fine woman here? Sorry. It was stupid.
Tyrone said, sounding unconvincing even to me.
Rahim, he's my problem, not yours. V said, you in enough trouble without killing him. I'll deal with him.
Funny how easily she slipped back into a North Philly accent.
You can have him. He won't be messing with that girl no more now she's dead.
I felt a moment of panic. Gee, it would be nice to have a confession, with the police recording every word on the 911 line. But if V prodded too hard, Rahim might get angry and shoot everybody, to prove a point only he understood. Still no sound from James, and luckily, Rahim hadn't looked in his direction.
Rahim, you can't fix Deb,
V said.
Dumbass kid don't know how to follow instructions,
he grumbled.
Now he in jail. He too stupid to be on the street.
Okay, close enough to a confession for me. The police were welcome to bust in any old time now. And maybe Rahim didn't know that dumbass kid had ratted on him?
So, you want to keep this piece of shit after what he'd done?
Rahim asked V, poking Tyrone with a toe, but less harshly than before. V nodded.
I'll make sure he pays. And you need him to keep working in the neighborhood. He's getting things done. He'll keep out of your way and you keep out of his.
That's fair. He get to live. For now.
Thank you, Rahim. Say hi to your mama for me.
I'll do that.
He stuffed the gun in his waistband, then turned and walked to the front door, apparently without a care in the world. But when he opened the door, he found himself looking at a pair of large policemen. It would have been funny if they hadn't all had weapons drawn. I stayed where I was, flat on the floor. James didn't. He came out of his corner and quietly stepped up behind Rahim before he could make a move and stuck his weapon in Rahim's back.
Don't even think about it.
Rahim apparently had just enough brains to know when he was beaten. He raised his hands. The police took his gun away and cuffed Rahim and stuffed him in the back of one of their cars. James followed the group out and spent some time explaining the situation to the cops. I peeled myself off the floor, as did V. Tyrone, on the other hand, rolled over onto his back and lay there staring at the ceiling, saying,
"Oh, man!"
over and over. Not much of a fighter, apparently. When James came back, he said to V and Tyrone,
"I want to see you at the station in the morning to give your statements."
Tyrone lurched off the floor, wincing from the lingering pain of his healing wounds. At least there weren't any new ones, and I wasn't about to feel sorry for him.
Everybody, I am so sorry. I did a stupid thing, and it got somebody killed. Almost got all of us killed. I never meant for anything like that to happen.
V didn't answer him. To me, it looked like she was concentrating really hard on pulling herself together, or maybe preparing to launch herself at her husband with claws and teeth bared. James reached out a hand to me, and I grabbed it, pulling myself to my feet.
He didn't say anything, but he wrapped his arm around me. I didn't protest. It felt good.
V. Tyrone.
James began.
Let the police handle it from here. When you give your statements tomorrow, tell them what you know and what you think you know. Don't try to sugarcoat what was going on. You'll be a lot more effective working in that neighborhood if Rahim's off the street. I hear you. Thanks for everything, man.
Tyrone said.
You're lucky I was here. I'm sure you two have plenty to talk about now, so we'll be going. No?
I was so ready to get out of there. Just let me add that I'm glad we're all safe and sound. Things could have turned out a lot worse. James walked me out the front door, then paused, checking the street. Everything looked peaceful, ordinary, but then it had looked like that when we arrived. He shepherded me to the passenger side, then walked around and got in the driver's side. But he didn't start the car immediately. What's wrong? I asked. He shook his head.
Nothing. Or a lot of things. Sometimes I really don't understand what's going on in this world. You were going along, doing your job, and somehow all this happens? Drug lords, shootings, people waving guns around at you. Do you know, for the last few months your job has been more dangerous than mine?
I stifled a giggle.
True.
Not the job description I signed up for, exactly. What would you have me do?
You did everything right. That's the problem. You didn't go snooping. You didn't pressure anyone. It all came to you. You're a catalyst, or maybe I mean a magnet. I might argue that you shouldn't have gotten into a car with two people you'd only just met and let them take you someplace unfamiliar, which turned out to be about as bad as could be.
How was I supposed to know they were in the middle of a hot and heavy affair, and that it would put us in the middle of some of the nastiest street gangs in the city? I didn't know if I was supposed to be mad, or mad at who. Whom? I think I did know there was something going on between them. I said in a softer tone. James turned to look at me.
Oh?
After they were both shot, and sitting there in the front seat bleeding, Tyrone reached out and touched Charisse's cheek. Just once. But there was so damned much tenderness in the way he did it, it broke my heart. I think he really did care for her. It wasn't just a thing between them. But I couldn't say that to V, because under her shiny facade, I think she still cares for Tyrone.
Come here.
He pulled me close, and I leaned against him.
When I saw that man with a gun, all I could think about was protecting you. I would have happily shot him, if that was what it took to stop him. He could have mowed down Tyrone and V, and I wouldn't have cared as long as you were safe. But I'm not supposed to think like that.
As far as I'm concerned, you go right ahead. Still, I know what you mean. Love's a bitch, isn't it? We sat in the car in silence for a few minutes, with James's arms around me. It was clear that love clouded a person's judgment, even made them do stupid things. It could certainly get in the way of rational thought and action. But what was the alternative? Make a point of staying alone through life? That didn't sound very satisfying. Oh, right. I'd tried that. This was better. I didn't want to screw up James's career, but I wasn't about to give him up for the sake of the FBI. I didn't expect him to tell me to quit my job at the society and stay home and knit. There were no guarantees that I'd be any safer sitting in a comfy chair armed only with knitting needles. And the irony was, as he had said, that his job was inherently more dangerous than mine, yet I was the one who kept getting into trouble. And I'd even managed to drag him into it. Were we cursed? I fell asleep on the way home. All of these confrontations were taking a toll. James nudged me when he'd parked in our driveway.
We're back.
Are you going to check the environs for drug-dealing gunmen? I said, without opening my eyes.
Are you actually worried?
He asked. I struggled to sit up and unlatched my seatbelt. No, not really. After all, I have an armed FBI agent to protect me. You're doing a great job, by the way, if I haven't said it already.
I'm trying. Come on, let's go in.
I followed him as he unlocked the door and stepped into our home. I'm hungry. Or maybe not meal-hungry, but comfort-food-hungry. What time is it?
About 10.
No wonder. Could we handle cocoa and toast?
Probably.
He produced both in record time as I sat in the kitchen and watched. I could have gone upstairs and changed into something comfortable, but it seemed like far too much effort to climb the stairs. What a truly odd day.
I won't argue with that,
James said, as he slid a plate with buttered toast sprinkled with cinnamon sugar in front of me. then went back to the microwave to retrieve a mug filled with hot cocoa.
There you go.
He sat down across from me. I have never seen such a tangled mess, I said, blowing on my cocoa to cool it. Drug wars, illicit affairs, wounded feelings all around, high finance, city government, and poor little us in the crosshairs. I'm beginning to understand why my predecessor stuck with handling places like the Oliver Mansion. At least people don't shoot at you, even if you botch a renovation or paint the place pink. They just take you to court. Is this what your life is like all the time?
Sometimes. It's not the norm. As I've said before, there's a lot of paperwork involved, so that means a lot of desk time, coupled with court time. You going into work tomorrow?
I have to. There's the board meeting. I hope we're ready for it, because I don't have enough brain cells left to redo anything. We've got a couple of surprises for the board that have come up since we sent out the information packets, but I don't know how much I can say about them yet. But then, I'm not sure how much of the so-called impact banking stuff will survive if V gets discredited. Attracting charming people like Rahim is not good for business.
She strikes me as a very focused woman who knows what she wants and goes for it. I wouldn't count her out just yet.
Believe me, I won't. I drained my cocoa. Can we go to bed now?
Of course.
Chapter 28. The next morning I had trouble getting started. I lay in bed, my eyes closed, trying to sort out what had happened the day before and what it meant. I had to decide whether to take any of the propositions or plans I'd been party to in the past week to the board later in the day. I figured V's impact financing department would go forward because it sounded as though it was trendy in high finance circles, but she might not play a personal role in it. Or maybe she would. It kind of depended on how much of the whole Rahim Tyrone mess went public. V hadn't done anything wrong, other than remain oblivious to her husband's affair, but public perception could affect matters like finance, whether or not it was logical. If her early background and her link to drug dealer Rahim became known, would it hurt her? Maybe it depended on whether her bank had a good PR person who could spin the story. V. Blakeney, from the slums to vice president, could play well in the media. But all in all, if V was out, I wasn't going to start spending that nice consulting fee she had dangled in front of me. Maybe it would be better to say nothing at the board meeting. Then there was the issue of the Oliver Mansion. At least that was a happier story, but I wasn't sure it was mine to tell, or not yet. It wasn't as though we had to do anything for it, although maybe if we were going to end up with the documents collection, we should factor that into our space planning now, rather than waiting. I should speak to LaToya about it, at least about the collections aspect. I wondered if Elliot had approached her about a role in his new institute, or was that also premature? Damn, I couldn't seem to decide anything this morning. Getting shot at and menaced by a drug-dealing thug definitely had messed with my brain. Before I could decide what else to worry about, James appeared with a mug of steaming coffee.
"You look like you need this,"
he said, handing it to me carefully. "Do I ever? Everything I'm working on seems to be in some sort of limbo, and I'm not sure what I'm supposed to know or who I can tell or when. It's very frustrating. I haven't even had time to fill you in on all of it."
"You can sit back and do nothing,"
he suggested, perching on the side of the bed. I could, but then the board members would be annoyed that I hadn't told them earlier. They regard this kind of insider information as one of the perks of the job. Goodness knows there aren't many.
"Have you talked to Martha lately?"
he asked. "Not since our meeting with Edward Perkins on Tuesday, which feels like it was a month ago. Why do you ask?"
"Martha has a peculiar way of cutting through the underbrush, so to speak. She might have some insights."
"Maybe," I said dubiously, sipping my coffee. "She'll be around today because of the board meeting. Maybe she has new info from Elliot. Are they serious, do you think?"
"You're asking me? Martha does not share that kind of information with me or anyone else. But because she has been so close-mouthed about this relationship, even with you, I'm guessing it may be. She'll tell us when she's ready."
I remembered one other thing to worry about. I'm concerned that if Elliot is voted onto the board, and if his relationship with Marty becomes known, someone might think there's a conflict of interest.
"You must like to worry. He's very well qualified, right?"
"He is."
"Then the board should welcome him with open arms. What two adults do on their own time is their business."
"All right. Then I'll worry about whether Elliot will still want to join the board, if he's going to be involved in one of those things I haven't told you about yet. That's going to be a big-time commitment.
Have you talked to him about it?
James asked. In case you haven't noticed, I've been kind of busy. And Elliot's future role is tied into the whole other thing with Edward Perkins, which you also don't know about and which is rather convoluted.
Take it one step at a time now. Drink your coffee, take a shower, I'll drive you to work.
Wait, I was going to drive since I'll be late tonight.
I'm driving, until I'm sure that Raheem doesn't have any colleagues who think it's their obligation to avenge his honor or something equally ridiculous. I don't mind coming to the board meeting.
I wish all the board members felt that way, but I'm sure they won't object to having you there.
So now you have a plan. I'll deliver you to work, and you will handle whatever comes your way.
Your faith in my superpowers is touching.
You can do it now,
he said, then leaned over and kissed me. It helped. There was nothing in the paper about Rahim's arrest, so maybe V would escape any fallout from it. As for Tyrone, I wasn't sure how that would play. Would the people he was trying to help be grateful that he had helped to bring down a criminal in their midst? Surely one less drug dealer on the street, especially an upper-level one, would be a plus. Unless the void left by Raheem was filled immediately by someone as bad or worse. Or a turf war resulted to fill that void. My, I was in a wonderful mood this morning. Stick to your own patch of turf, Nell. James let me off in front of the society.
I'll see you later. Call me if anything changes.
I'll do that. Thanks for the lift. Outside the car, I shut the door and watched him pull away. He was being so sweet. I didn't really think there was any danger from anyone anymore, but I was beginning to enjoy being taken care of. When I walked into the lobby, Detective Hrivenak was waiting for me, pacing and fuming. I'd hear about all this from the street cops, she said. Bob leaned on the reception desk, listening. Good morning to you too, Meredith. I assume you'd like to talk about this? Damn right. She stalked off toward the room under the stairs, and I had no choice but to follow. I closed the door behind me. Would you mind telling me what I was supposed to have done? I began. We filled you in right here last night, and then James and I took V home. Tyrone wasn't there, but he arrived shortly after we did. We'd barely begun talking when Raheem fired a shot through the front window, then broke down the kitchen door and came raging in, waving a gun. I called 911. Was I supposed to call you, with Raheem pointing a gun at me? I left the line open for 911.
I know. I heard the recording this morning.
Is there anything in there that resembles a confession from Raheem?
Maybe. He doesn't play by the same rules you and I do.
Tell me about it. He actually thought he was doing V a favor.
Yeah, more like building street cred for himself.
So where do things stand now?
We've got him for conspiracy to commit murder, even if he didn't pull the trigger himself. We'll make that stick.
And neither Tyrone nor V is implicated in any of this? Detective Hrivenak shook her head.
Ms. Blakeney says she hasn't seen her cousin for years, and I believe her. Mr. Blakeney is guilty of being a cheating jerk, but that's not a crime around here. He's going to have to live with the fact that he got his sweetheart killed.
Will he be okay working in that neighborhood?
Yeah, sure. Nobody else wants to kill him. Raheem was the only one who cared. You going to stay out of that part of town now?
I don't know. There are a couple of projects that the society may become involved in that could take me back there, but I can't talk about them yet. So the answer is, maybe. Should I invite you along if I go?
The detective produced what passed for a smile. No, I'd really rather stay as far away from you as I can. There are a few other crimes in the city that I need to worry about.
I understand. I'll bet you try to catch the bad guys before they get as far as me.
Deal. The detective stood up. I'll be in touch if I need anything else. Thanks for your help. And say hi to that guy of yours. He's pretty good at staying on his side of the fence.
That he is. I'll walk you out. I led Detective Hrivenak back to the lobby and sent her on her way. We seemed to be sneaking up on something approaching friendship, although I would never think of saying anything like that to her, and I doubted we'd ever go so far as to have lunch together, unless there was a crime involved. But it was a good thing to have a friend on the police force.
Everything okay?
Bob asked as I turned to go upstairs. Just fine. Better than usual, I think, although I shouldn't say that because then something is sure to go wrong. Thanks for asking. I made it to the elevator and up to the third floor without interruption, but when I emerged from the elevator, Shelby appeared and grabbed my arm.
Come with me, we've got something to show you.
Mystified, I let her drag me to the boardroom, where I discovered most of the staff assembled.
The central table was blanketed with documents and photographs and a few three-dimensional artifacts. I looked around at my staff. What's this all about? Shelby took the lead. You said you wanted material about all the old neighborhoods in the city. This is what we've put together in the past couple of days. Once we got into it, we got excited. The photos and early maps are wonderful. Even some of the advertising flyers. I can see why they'd attract interest from the public. Oh, and you should see this. She handed me a photo in a clear plastic sleeve. I studied it. It was a brick row house dating from around 1900, I'd guess. It was flanked by matching row houses. A family sat on the front steps, mother, father, and a couple of kids, dressed up in their Sunday best. Then I looked more closely. This is the society's house? It is, Shelby said triumphantly. I found it in the development files. That's what it looked like not long before it came to us. Wow. Looking at this small piece of history, I had very mixed feelings. On the one hand, that was where Raheem Hill's hired gun had shot at me and could have killed me. On the other hand, it was a perfect example of what the neighborhood had once been. Taken one way, it could be a condemnation of years of neglect and willful ignorance on the part of the city, letting what had once been a thriving neighborhood rot away. On the other hand, it could serve as a goal, what a conscientious developer could strive for in rebuilding that same neighborhood. Not sterile high-rises where the elevators never worked and the hallways stank of piss. Not shoebox housing, marching in rows alongside a noisy highway with no greenery in sight and only abandoned cars for decoration. A neighborhood where people were happy to live, where they cared about one another and took pride in their homes. Thank you all, I said, looking around the table. They'd listened to me, and better yet, they'd heard me. This was a terrific start.
We thought you might want something to show the board today,
Ben said. I think you're right. They'd just made my decision for me. Even if neither of these projects ever happened, this was the kind of thing we should be talking about at the Society. Which long-dead poet had said, a man's reach should exceed his grasp? If we didn't try, if we always played it safe, then we would wither away inside our handsome brick walls, out of step with the world around us. That was not what I wanted the Society to do. I'm so glad you did this. After a number of comments of the aw shucks variety, staff members went back to their usual tasks. Shelby stayed behind. You know, that was fun, she told me. Really? Really, I didn't grow up around here, and I'm still pretty new to the city, but looking at these things... She waved her hand at the table. I can see what the place must have been like. The question now is, can it be as good again, or better? The world has changed, and some things aren't coming back. But it's worth trying for, isn't it now? Shelby asked. It is, and we will. Starting with the board meeting today. Chapter 29 After Shelby was gone, leaving me alone for a brief moment, I found I was struggling not to cry. For once, it was not out of frustration or anger or fear. It was because of what my staff had done for me. They'd heard what I had said, and the results were spread out over the table in front of me. Which, I realized, would have to be cleared in time for the board meeting, but there were a few hours until then. There was no rush. I walked slowly around the table, taking in the materials that the staff had assembled. I felt so proud... Proud of them for helping, and proud of the Society for collecting all these wonderful images and documents for so long. Maybe we hadn't done such a shabby job, for here before me was laid out the history of the city in tangible form. And now we could use this to try to make something positive happen in the city. To give back. That felt right. On my second pass, I started picking up documents, just a few here and there. I needed enough to assemble a small selection that would demonstrate what we could do for Tyrone's agency and V's Bank and Elliot's Institute. Too many would overwhelm our board members, who were not, by and large, academic historians, but a few strong images could get the message across. I wanted to tell a story in pictures and old newspaper clippings and ledger books and school records, but tell it quickly and effectively. I stuck my head out of the boardroom door. "Eric," I called out.
"Yes, ma'am,"
he replied, bounding up from his desk and approaching. "I want to pull some pictures to hand out at the board meeting to prove the point I've been making. Do we have some nice folders or binders so it all looks good?"
No problem, Nell.
Did you have a hand in this, Eric? I waved at the covered table.
Just the copying part. I don't know much about local history.
Well, then you've got a fresh eye. What do you think makes the best case for our neighborhoods project? I stepped back from the table to give him space to look. He took his time. Finally, he said,
The ones with people. I mean, buildings are nice, but that's not what makes a neighborhood work, right?
You're right. Thank you. We need the ones with people, all kinds of people. Families, workers coming home from the factories, street vendors, festivals, elections. Anything that shows that the neighborhoods were alive and thriving back then. I don't know if they can be that again, but we have to start somewhere. Let me put together maybe 20, 25 examples, and then I'll hand them over to you to copy and let you clear the table.
I'll go find something nice to put them in while you're doing that.
10 minutes later, I dropped a stack on Eric's desk. Back in my office again, I pulled out my meeting agenda and almost tore it up. A lot had changed, but there was a lot I wasn't sure I should mention, since it was far from set in stone. I hated to dangle a lot of hints, but solid facts were hard to come by. I decided I would just wing it. After a couple of weeks during which I'd been shot at, watched a woman die in front of me, and faced down a notorious drug dealer, I thought I could manage a room full of middle-aged guys in suits and ties. Which did not mean I wasn't nervous when the time came to face them. For once, Marty had not arrived early, but came in along with several others and claimed a seat next to me. I leaned over to whisper, Everything okay? No problems. Elliot will be along later. You're assuming he'll be voted in? Of course I am. These guys would be idiots not to. She settled back in her seat. I waited until we had at least a quorum. There were always a few stragglers, and then nodded to Lewis Howard, the venerable board chair, and he called the meeting to order. It was a larger turnout than usual, and that was before James slid in. Apparently he'd had a word with Eric, who came in with a couple of additional folding chairs. Quite a party we were having. Lewis began with the agenda, which included a number of minor administrative issues that needed to be addressed. When it came to the vote on Elliot's appointment to the board, there was no discussion and no dissent. He was in. As soon as the vote had been taken, Marty pulled out her cell phone and texted a quick message, but it was still a surprise to see Elliot walk through the door. It was an even bigger surprise to see him accompanied by Edward Perkins, who smiled at me. So we were good to go? We'd finished the mundane business part of the meeting, and it was time to spring a couple of surprises. I stood up. Gentlemen, there are several items that have arisen since we mailed you the packet of information last week, but I believe we need to address them sooner rather than later. I'm sorry I don't have all the details for you yet, but it has been a rather challenging week. Let me give you the high points, and we can discuss them at length another time. I took a deep breath to calm myself, then glanced at James, who nodded his encouragement. Last week I was approached by... And I launched into the story of Tyrone and Charisse's visit, and the tragic results of that day, and what I had learned and observed since. I left out some of the grittier details, but I tried to convey that what we had discussed in our short time together had led me to reconsider where I thought the society's responsibility lay. Now and then I glanced around the room and was not encouraged. Expressions among the board members ranged from bewildered to bored to annoyed. Not a good start. I segued into a discussion of the Oliver House that Marty had brought to me, after glancing at her for her approval. She signaled to me to go ahead with it, so I outlined the issues I thought were involved there. And then I glanced at Edward Perkins, who had sat silent with a small smile, listening. I know this sounds daunting, coming all at once, but I think we may have a solution that should address both problems and also make everyone happy. Mr. Perkins, would you care to share what we talked about?
This is a bit unorthodox,
grumbled one of the more staid board members, who had been known to fall asleep in meetings. I turned quickly to respond to him. Yes, but I think you'll see the relevance, so I ask for some leeway to proceed. I'm sure you have all met Edward Perkins, and he has an extraordinary proposal for us. Mr. Perkins? I was relieved when he rose and took my place at the head of the table as I stepped back.
Thank you for indulging. I have been a member of this institution for many years, and have known many of you for as long. Recently, I have been presented with the opportunity to make an unusual contribution to the local historical community. and I'd like to explain it to you."
I took his seat next to James, and now I could sit back and watch the reactions of the board members. It took a bit for them to wake up when Edward began speaking, but I could see them gradually listening more intently. And by the time he had wrapped up his short speech, most looked positively excited. Edward smiled at them, then turned to me.
"Ms. Pratt, do you have anything to add?"
"Thank you for your very clear presentation, Mr. Perkins." As he resumed his seat, I surveyed the board. "I'm sure you have questions, and there are quite a few issues to be resolved, but I think you have heard the gist of it. Let me add another thing." I picked up the stack of folders Eric had assembled, and Marty took them from me and began doling them out. "What you have before you is a small example of what we have in our own collections, and what we can provide to any agency or group that wants to take part in reviving the troubled parts of the city. And there's one more piece. The local investment banking firm Dillingham Harrington is committed to creating a new funding unit to address social issues, and the society has been invited to act as a consultant, providing an historical context for the projects it supports."
"They going to pay?"
asked a member I didn't know well. "Yes, they are." For a long moment, the board looked confused, leafing through the handouts in front of them. But it didn't take long for Lewis Howard to grasp what had just happened. He stood up and slowly began speaking.
"My colleagues here may be a bit slow to realize it, but you have done something the likes of which I have never seen during my tenure at the Society. You have discovered opportunities to advance our institution's stature in the community without compromising our core values. And to bring in money. Bravo, Nell."
He began clapping, and several other members joined in. For the second time in one day, I wanted to cry, but I didn't think that would be professional. I also rejected saying, "just doing my job," even though it was true. I felt extraordinarily lucky to have found myself in the midst of such an alignment of the stars, and maybe getting shot at was the price I had to pay for that. But all things considered, this was the best possible outcome. "Thank you all. As I'm sure you can guess, there's still a lot of work to be done, but nothing we can't handle. I should have more detailed proposals in your hands after the first of the year." After that, the meeting wound down quickly. Everyone was eager to go home, or wherever else they were going. Lewis Howard stayed behind.
"Nell, I meant what I said. Under your guidance, the Society is now in a position to take a giant leap forward. Well done."
"Thank you, Lewis. I feel very lucky." And then he was gone, leaving me with James, Elliot, and Marty. I'd seen Edward Perkins slip out while Lewis was speaking. "We pulled it off," I said, with something like wonder.
"That we did. Although we might be misleading," Marty said. "I think you did most of the work."
"And dodged a bullet, literally. I'll stick to the we. We should celebrate." And so we did, with a long, luxurious dinner that included a lot of champagne. It was close to midnight as we said our goodbyes outside the restaurant, and I watched Marty and Elliot head off together toward Marty's house, which was not the same direction as Elliot's. They looked happy even from the rear.
"You are an amazing woman,"
James said in a low voice. "I'm just doing my job," I replied. "You know, preserving history, saving the city, solving crimes, all in a day's work. By the way, it's your turn to play hero. Can we go home now?"
"Of course. You and I aren't done celebrating."
This concludes Dead End Street by Sheila Conley. Narrated by Marguerite Gavin. Copyright 2016 by Sheila Conley. This unabridged audiobook is recorded by arrangement with the Berkeley Publishing Group, an imprint of Penguin Publishing Group, a division of Penguin Random House, LLC, and was produced in the year 2018 by Tantor Media Incorporated, a division of Recorded Books, which holds the copyright thereto. Please visit Tantor.com for more information on our growing library of unabridged audiobooks.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.